Welcome to episode 39 of Leading People with me, Jerry Murray. This episode is brought to you by Wide Circle, helping you make better talent decisions. To learn more, visit widecircle.eu. That's widecircle.eu. Who is responsible for customer experiences in your organization? How do leaders help or hinder the customer experience? And why are most organizations designed to deliver lousy customer experiences? And what is a chatty checkout? These are just some of the many questions my guest, Professor Yves Van Varenberg, addresses in this week's show. As an award-winning expert on customer experience, Yves shares with us his insights and tips for how to get it right. Whether you're working in an organization or as an independent or freelance worker, there's lots to learn. So let's dive right in. Yves Van Varenberg, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jerry. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to our today's conversation. I heard you speak recently, and I was intrigued by what you were talking about, not just from the point of view of customers, but there's a whole lot of stuff around how organizations are led. There's a whole load of stuff around how people are empowered, etc. And I'm really looking forward to getting into this with you for our listeners. So before we get there, because I only know you briefly, so I'm as curious as anybody else. How did you get here to where you are today as a professor at Cowell? Was there a particular person, place, or an event, or anything that stands out, or an epiphany moment, or some sort of things like that that kind of led you to, you're into the world of customer experience and that today? So maybe you could just take our listeners on that journey with you.
Well, I was not predestined to become a professor. I think if you would ask all my teachers in secondary whether I would ever end up doing something intellectual, most of them would say, nah, not at all. So I always had kind of lowest grades back in secondary. I always muddled through. But in the end, right, I saw the light, and I suddenly realized that I found my passion with marketing, with customers, and that's thanks to a number of people, right? I cannot point out one specific person, but maybe in secondary, my economics teacher was talking about kind of markets and how they function, so that kind of triggered a little bit, triggered my interest in economics. Later on, if I look at some of the teachers I had in higher education, they were really wonderful in talking about marketing, talking about customers. My master thesis supervisor, he gave me a topic that really aroused my interest, and that was about how organizations can deal with customer complaints. So that's moving into the direction of customer experience management already in 2006, 2007. And he was really the one who inspired me to go the extra mile and try to understand the topic in more detail and look at that organizational point of view and on experiences and on complaints in that case. Mm-hmm. And he was the one that really kind of pushed me to go the extra mile, and he really aroused my interest in doing research and trying to understand something in more depth. I always had a love for statistics, and later on I did a master in statistics as well. But suddenly I realized, hey, I like analyzing data. I like understanding things. Why not go to do a PhD? So I ended up with researchers from Ghent University, where we were focused on understanding services, service management, and my entire PhD was about service recovery, which is essentially customer service issues. So I was always intrigued by that kind of negative side, perhaps, looking at the how organizations can deal with that in an optimal way, because so many organizations tend to screw up. So that intrigued me, and just keep on going and going. And over time, I started realizing that it's not only about customer service, but there's an entire logic around it. And that's the whole idea of customer experience. So as a professor, you have the luxury of being pretty autonomous. So if you want to explore a topic in more detail, mm-hmm. then you can go for it. And so it started a little bit with that negative side, with people complaining about defective products and services and how to deal with that in a proper way. Then just moving towards kind of the bigger picture and how to run an organization to deliver a great experience to customers. So in a nutshell, there are few people that really aroused my interest and really pushed me to learn more about it.
Mm-hmm. Good. You and I share a very modicum, as they say, of overlap, and that is that I wrote my MBA thesis on customer service quality.
And, oh, wow.
These were the days of an organization called TARP. Do you remember them? They used to measure complaints. And Frederick Reichel's work on customer measuring, sort of customer feedback and all that, was early days with the Bain organization and that. So I still have a distant memory of that. But I was also probably fascinated by it for some of the reasons that you're going to explain to us later, because it wasn't just about the customer, a whole lot of things that you could look at from that type of research. And I also think it's very interesting to hear you talk about, how you went through your secondary education. There might be young people out there who may not have excelled academically in that part of their life, and they may be just ready to excel in their third level education out there. So anybody out there listening who's in the third level education world, maybe this is your moment. What do you think, Eve?
Absolutely. Definitely, if you're in secondary education, don't give up. And maybe a good tip is not always listen to others too much.
Right.
Because if I count the number of people that really gave me kind of good advice, between quotation marks, on what I should do with my life and the tracks that I should choose. There's so many people that gave that recommendation, like, this is not for you. Some people even call me too dumb to understand. I'm really looking forward to meeting those people again and have that conversation, like, and what about you now? Maybe you were wrong.
Well, I'll tell you... So for our listeners and for yourself, a little anecdote. There's a very famous musician in Scotland in the traditional music world. I won't actually name him, but he at school was told he would never amount to anything, and especially not a musician. And at the age of 16 or 17, he ended up in a professional band and they toured the world. And he made a point of everywhere he went, every exotic location, he would send a postcard back to his music teacher and say,
wow.
Guess where I am? Where are you these days? Are you still in the school? So he used to do this. I don't know how many years he kept it up. So we never know. And for parents out there as well, sometimes let your children express themselves, let them explore the things that interest them. And, if they get good at something and passionate about it, people can make really good careers and things that they get excited about. But that won't get us to the end of it. Won't get us to the whole into the depth of customer service and customer experience and all that. I think one of the things that stood out for me was when I heard you talk about this, and there were several people in the audience who actually noticed this. And this was this rethinking the whole idea of how you interact with a customer. And I suppose the people who set the tone for this in an organization are the leaders. And I'd like to sort of, because this is the Leading People podcast, I'd like to start with the impact they have on how customer service can go well or can go horribly wrong, and maybe then evolve into some of those key insights that you've gathered over the years around how to get the customer experience right, not just for the day-to-day operations, but for the greater good of the organization and society as a whole.
Yeah. Leaders can have a huge impact, and it always starts at the top, in my view. Whenever you want to improve the customer experience, if your board of directors and your executive committee is not involved, yeah, good luck with that. For the very simple reason that everyone is responsible for the customer experience. It's not just the responsibility of the marketing department or the customer service department or whatever department, logistics department that needs to ship stuff to customers. Everyone is responsible for the customer experience, and the customer interacts with almost everyone within the organization. Mm-hmm. Even a finance department, like for invoices and all that stuff, they still interact with those people as well. And something that strikes me is that very often customers seem to know the organization much better than the people in the organization itself, right? Because they interact with everyone, whereas everyone within the organization is really kind of working in silos, focusing on their own little thing that they need to do on their own island. Whereas customer experience is everyone's responsibility. So you need the leaders of the organization to really kind of, yeah, break those silos and unite everyone to rally everyone around the idea of, hey, we need to improve the customer experience. So we'll talk about it later probably, but whenever we go into an organization to do some consulting and to help them out with improving the customer experience with the spin-off company that we created, yeah, the first thing we do is have a talk with the executives over there and show them the numbers, like, okay, these are the benefits from that you can reap from improving the customer experience. There's plenty of studies showing that there is a return on investment, and that's what these people want to see first. Right, the hard evidence that improving the customer experience indeed leads to better results from an organizational point of view. But that's where it starts. The biggest challenge at that point in time is to convince, well, if they are convinced, the biggest challenge is to convince everyone else in the organization and to let people work in a different way, perhaps. Let them serve customers in a different way. Let them think about customers and even talk about customers in a different way. And that's probably the biggest challenge. So you start with the highest leadership, but then you need other leaders in the middle management or even a team leader, other leaders within the organization that really can tell the story and implement the story throughout the other tranches of the organization. So leadership is so, so, so important. And in some cases, yeah, it's missing because mm-hmm. they don't understand the benefits, because they don't have the right knowledge yet, because they don't see how an experience strategy can contribute to their results. But you need to get those people on board first. Then you can start working with everyone else. And what we see is that we need to have these people on board because there are some difficult decisions to be made within your organization. And the talk that you attended was really about, hey, what are organizations doing wrong in order to improve the customer experience? And the main story back then was, well, maybe organizations are not made to deliver great experiences to their customers, right? Most initiatives are only scratching the surface, and we need initiatives that go beneath the surface and that really rethink the way people are working. So improving the customer experience requires a lot of change management as well, and yeah, we all know how it goes with change management. It's hard, right? We need to let people work in a very different way, and that's hard. And we also need to sacrifice some sacred cows, perhaps.
And right. So if we let's just unpack some of that now. So to be able to provide great customer experience, you have to have the structure in the organization to be able to do this, right? And you mentioned the concept of silos earlier. You mentioned it's everybody's responsibility. And here's what I notice sometimes with a lot of things in organizations is you can work in an organization and forget that you yourself, as a person working there, you're also a customer of many other organizations. And sometimes some of the things that organizations do within themselves, those people wouldn't want that customer experience to happen to them. So let's unpack the structural factors that contribute to challenges in delivering an excellent customer experience.
Well, as I said, there are a number of sacred cows that need to be sacrificed, and the first one is actually flip the pyramid. So in a traditional organization, you have frontline employees at the bottom over your organization. They're the largest number, but probably the least important. You have the middle management, you have your top management team, and you have the CEO on top of that. And what we see in those organizations is that it's almost about the power of the leader, and it's always about the ego of the leader, right? I rise to the top, and I have the biggest ego and whatever, and everything needs to revolve around me. That's at least what I see in a number of organizations. Mm. If you want to manage the customer experience, you need to flip the pyramid. And with that, I mean, frontline employees need to be at the top in one way or the other. Middle manager's task is to support the frontline employees so that they can perform their task of serving customers well. The executive committee, the top management team's job is to support the middle management so that they can support the frontline employees. So in terms of leadership, what I see in traditional organizations is a lot of transactional leadership, a lot of kind of leadership focused on the person. Like, I want to be the most powerful one in this organization. Whereas what we really need is actually servant leadership. And there are studies that show that servant leadership can improve the customer experience, which in turn can improve the performance of the organization. So what is servant leadership? Well, it's the moment that you say, as a leader, it's not about me. It's about the other person. And what can I do as a leader to support the people below me, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of, so they can do their job better, so that they can grow as a person as well. Mm. And once you adopt that mindset, or once organizations adopt that mindset, we see that these organizations are becoming better and better and better. Mm. So it starts with being customer-centric. And a nice sign of customer centricity is, okay, how much value do you attach to your frontline employees? Mm-hmm. And I always use a very simple test for it. Whenever I'm in a boardroom and I give people a dilemma, and I tell them, imagine that your laptop breaks down. You're the CEO. Imagine that your laptop breaks down. And at the same time, a laptop from a frontline employee breaks down. So both laptops arrive at the same time at the IT department to get fixed. Mm-hmm. Whose laptop is going to be fixed first? Is it the one from the frontline employee or from the CEO? What do you think? You with all your experience. Whose laptop is going to be fixed first?
Oh, you're asking me the question now.
Yes, absolutely.
I know exactly whose laptop is going to be fixed first, because the minute they know whose laptop it is, everybody wants to impress the CEO, and the CEO's laptop will go back first. It's just the way this hierarchical thing works in an organization, and particularly in an organization where there's a lot of fear.
Yep.
Because the CEO's judgment of how effective his IT department would be clouded by how fast they turned around his laptop. And not how well they provided IT service, IT software support hardware to the customer. That's usually what you see.
Probably his or her laptop is like top notch, has too many features, most expensive model, whatever, that that person doesn't need at all. But anyhow, one acid test of customer centricity, of being focused on the customer experience, is exactly that. In an organization that is really focused on the customer experience, the laptop from the frontline employee will be fixed first, because that laptop is probably needed to serve a customer. And because of the fact that the laptop is broken, the frontline employee might not be able to serve a customer in an appropriate way. There is some delay, there is some customer dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
So in terms of cost to the organization, consequences for the organization, that's probably a bad idea to take the CEO's laptop first, because that CEO has a tablet, maybe has a desktop computer that he or she can work with. Mm-hmm. Whereas for the frontline employee, it's a different story. Mm. So for me, flipping the pyramid means giving priority to the people that are serving customers.
You talk about the term customer centricity, and that's based on the work of Tracy and Weersema and their three-pronged model of customer centricity, operational excellence, and was it product innovativeness or whatever they called it. And they often said that this is going back, to 1994, 95, this model. So they kind of advocated you could only really be a really good in one, but you needed to be in the top quartile in the other. And I think this was also influenced by Michael Porter's thinking in those early days around differentiation strategies and all that. Has the dial shifted today, whereby it's not even about choosing customer centricity over other models? It has to be at the center of a concentric circle.
Actually, yes. We're seeing that in recent years, customers are more empowered. Mm-hmm. They have more choice. Mm-hmm. The world is their playing field. So they demand better service, better products, better experiences. Mm-hmm. Because they have the power to kind of punish an organization that doesn't deliver that by writing a negative review or simply by buying something somewhere else from another organization. Right. So it is shifting. And what we're seeing in the last couple of years, at least, is that customer experience is becoming so important, much more than creating a nice brand, for example.
Right.
So we even see that in academic studies, in longitudinal academic studies, that the impact of the brand mm-hmm. on the organization's performance is becoming weaker and weaker over time, mm-hmm. whereas the effect of the customer experience, customer centricity, or whatever you want to call it, that's increasing over time. It's becoming more and more and more important. So organizations that don't put the customer central these days, they will run into trouble.
I think we've got a recent example, actually, because I'll name them at the risk of being sued. Maybe it would make the podcast even more popular. But Ryanair would be a great example of a company that focused on operational excellence. Everything about it was how to get people efficiently through an airport, onto the planes, whatever it took to reduce the cost, etc. And that kind of worked for their early part of their life, right? People kind of went, okay, I put up with bit of crappy service here and there. But I think that the whole thing shifted about 5 or 6 years ago, and they had to start to take customer experience seriously, right? So that model started, they might have bought into that model where, you know what, we'll prioritize this and the customer centricity can sit second and whatever. But I think that's an example of a company that found that it didn't work to ignore the customer experience. Would that be true?
Well, to ignore them completely.
Well, it's always hard to tell with Ryanair whether you were being ignored completely or not.
Yeah.
But most people have a Ryanair story to tell, right?
Yeah. But what's nice about Ryanair is that their promise is clear. Their promise is pretty clear. Like, okay, this is what you can expect from us. Mm-hmm. You're not going to pay a lot, but because of that, you cannot expect a wow experience. So you have to accept that there are some issues that are not going that well or that are not that great when you take a Ryanair flight. So their promise is very, very clear. And what happens is that the bar for customer experience is going up over time. Mm. So what people are willing to accept as a minimum standard is slightly going up as well. Not dramatically, but it's slightly going up year after year after year. So for Ryanair, it's kind of adapting a little bit to that minimum threshold. What people kind of accept, okay, this is still okay, that is going up, but Ryanair will never become a company that is great at customer experience, or at least at wowing customers.
No.
Because in Ryanair's case, they might even design the experience in such a way that it gives you the feeling that it's really the cheapest. Right. If you look at Colruyt, for example, a Belgian retailer, their stores are not really looking great. Right. It's more like an industrial building that you're entering.
A warehouse, but, yes.
Yeah, a warehouse. And that reinforces the perception that they must have low prices. Mm. So for Ryanair, you can even argue that customer experience management is not necessarily about wowing customers all the time, but it's reinforcing what you're promising to your customers. And they can actually use experience management to reinforce the idea of being the cheapest. But of course, their key priority is that operational excellence and to be that cheapest in the market. Although they're seeing much more competition from other low-cost carriers these days.
So I think there's something emerging from this, Eve. This notion of clarity of expectations is actually an ingredient of the customer experience, because if you set the expectation level at a level which is acceptable enough, then that is the customer. As long as the customer gets that experience, you're meeting their expectation. Would that be where you're going with this?
Well, yeah. It's all about understanding customers. And expectations is one thing. It's a very important thing, but it's essentially about understanding your customers. What do your customers want, in essence? What are they looking for? What are the problems that they're facing in their lives? Mm. And how can we, as an organization, address that problem? Mm-hmm. And how can we do that in a different way? How can we design a product or service and create an experience around it so that the problem is resolved? Right? There's a famous saying in marketing is you don't buy a power drill, you buy a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you know it.
I know it, yes. I know that. That was who was it that came up with that now?
I think it was Levitt.
Levitt, yeah. Theodore Levitt, yeah.
But if you think about it, who in his right mind takes a power drill, drills a hole in the wall, and says, "Wow, look at a hole in the wall"? Yes. Nobody, right?
Partner so, comes into the room and says, "Oh my God, there's a hole in the wall." And she's going, "Yeah, yeah, look what I got, this new toy. I put a hole in the wall."
Yeah. The power drill is just a tool. The hole in the wall is just a tool to create kind of experience with a customer. Because you want to hang a painting or whatever to your wall. But the same problem can be solved in different ways as well. And that's what Tisa did with these adhesives, these fixes.
Yeah.
You can just put on the wall and then you can attach a painting to it. It's a different experience that solves the same problem in a better way. So understanding customers and customers' problems is so important. And being able to discuss, bring it back to the leadership, being able to discuss problems that customers have is already a first step, I would say, to kind of improve the customer experience. I know organizations, some months ago, I went to an organization and I started talking about problems. Okay, what are the problems that your customers experience? I believe it was the CTO or the CEO that says, we don't have problems in this company. We don't talk about problems. Like, right. Maybe that's your first problem.
Yes.
So being able to talk about the negative and talk about issues that people might have or problems that people might have is already a first step.
Okay. I want to get to a topic. So we've talked about customer centricity. I want to go to something that I think is slightly bigger, and that is this notion of human centricity. And because when I heard you talk, you talked a lot about the human being in all of this. And I mean, customers are human beings, right? Yes. As far as we know.
So far as we know, yeah.
Yes. Well, for the moment, I don't think robots are buying anything on their own. So that's it's always a good sign that the humans are still in control of the technology. And on the other hand, you know, it's human to human that makes the customer experience in many cases. Okay, there's technologies and processes and that. So tell me and our listeners about the role that, you know, looking into your organization and the people, is some of the things companies do to limit that ability of the employee. That human being to actually give that amazing service or that amazing experience to a customer. So let's unpack that internal stuff now around this.
Yes.
Coming up, how do you create peak experiences for your customers? Why is efficiency the enemy of great customer experiences? And what is a chatty checkout? Eve will provide answers to these and many more questions, including the million-dollar question. So, let's go back to our conversation.
It's right to talk about a human experience. And technology is great at creating a lot of convenience. Mm-hmm. Everything goes swiftly. Everything goes, easy, whatever. That's great, but that's... From an organizational point of view, that's boring. Mm. Customers find this boring. And we know from a lot of research that in an experience, not every experience should be wow. Not every interaction with a company should be wow. But at least you need to have some peak experiences.
Right.
Some. If you have multiple interactions with an organization, you need to have some peak experiences, and the last experience with your organization should also be like a high. But those peak experiences are rarely created with technology. And whenever we research this, whenever we talk with people, with customers about their experiences, very often it's about, what people remember is something that was wrong and got fixed well, or something that an employee did one way or the other that really creates something memorable. And and that's something that I see these days, is that people are too focused on that technology. They're too focused on efficiency as well. Everything needs to go rapidly. If you're reaching out to a contact center, it feels like you are bothering them, right? Because they need to get you off the phone as quickly as possible so that they can go to the next customer on the line and all that stuff. Is that a smart thing to do? And what people remember typically is, that employee took time to help me out. That employee really went the extra mile for me. That employee did something against the organization's guidelines. Imagine that you have a 2-year warranty and your product breaks down, 2 years and 2 days after you bought it. From an organizational point of view, well, bad for you, but we're not resolving the issue. If you have an employee at that point in time that realizes how stupid that situation is, like 2 days after the warranty expired, and that says, okay, hey, no problem, we'll fix it. Mm-hmm. That's something that you will remember.
Yeah.
People who are going the extra mile are really what you need in an organization. And what I see in many organizations is that employees are almost confined.
Yeah.
They're forced to work in a certain way. They have these scripts with which they can, with a lot of sentences to greet a customer and all that stuff. But customers kind of notice that. They notice that the organization is maybe a little bit too efficient, is maybe kind of, not taking into account that the customer really wants something. And some cases, it's really about, taking time to serve a customer. And a nice example is from Jumbo lately. It's a Dutch retailer where you have a chatty checkout.
Oh, yeah.
So you have a checkout where you can talk with the employee as long as you want. So you have checkouts that are super focused on efficiency, where it's all about getting out of the store as quickly as possible. But then you have these other checkouts, the chatty checkouts. I really like them because it's really about something inefficient. Mm-hmm. It's super inefficient from an organizational point of view, but it's super effective.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit the trade-off that organizations need to make, that leaders need to make. Like, are we focusing on efficiency within our organization? And if we increase our efficiency, is that still effective in terms of the customer experience?
Yeah.
Because what people tend to remember are typically, the result of an inefficient process. A product breaks down and they replace it in a remarkable way. Mm-hmm. Or you have an employee that takes time to really understand you and really tries to solve your problem, or that is taking time to serve you well. So beyond a certain point, too efficient means not effective anymore. An organization can really create that situation where, that they are too efficient and not effective anymore. So that's one of the dangers that they have.
So our listeners are probably going, okay, so what have you seen organizations doing, or what have you been involved in with organizations where what is it they're doing to give their employees enough bandwidth or enough scope to give that experience to the customer? So having that discretion, I would, maybe the word discretion is there. It's a sort of a certain range of so, you can, in many organizations that you're going to find it hard for particularly control orientated people to let people loose completely, but there's bandwidth, isn't there, that they can give them. What have you seen in terms of that?
That's a $1 million question.
Can I send you an invoice?
Of course not. the $1 million word is not discretion. The $1 million word is trust.
Ah, okay.
Control is easy. We have our Excel sheet with performance reviews of our employees. We have our Excel sheets with surveys from customers that we can link to certain employees, and then we can use that to control them. That's easy. And the problem is, it's bad. Because once you start controlling people, they do what you measure. They don't do what is good for the organization. They do what you measure. And they make it seem like they're doing the right thing. I'm going to give you one example from a company that I consulted, and it was a contact center. And whenever there were long waiting times, right? The employee gets this information on the screen, right? Yeah. There are so many callers, right? And they're waiting for that long already.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever they saw an increase in the number of people trying to reach the contact center, they also noticed that, well, every call is logged. Every call has a certain tag to it. Like, this was the kind of call, or this was what the customer was asking for, and so on. So they noticed if the waiting time goes up, that a certain number or certain category wound up as well. A certain category was ticked much more often, and that was the no specific question category. Oh. Because the employees realized that if we hit this button, if we label this phone call as no specific question, then no survey is sent out to the customer. Long waiting lines out of the employee's control. Mm-hmm. No survey, and they are rewarded based on the survey. They're rewarded based on the scores. So they do what is measured. They make it seem like they're working well. On the opposite, if you establish a culture based on trust, and again, that's a super hard thing to do, what we see is that people do what is expected from them, mm-hmm. and they even do more. They even go the extra mile. So how do you get there? How do you move from that control-oriented environment to a trust-oriented environment? That's where the leadership kicks in again.
Right.
You need to have the right people within the organization. And one manager that I worked with really put it brilliantly. She said, how can we expect our customers to trust our employees when we don't trust our employees? Yeah. So we are controlling them over and over. I believe those employees have 38 KPIs. Which what? Is That's yeah, a, 38.
I mean, how do they keep track? The brain can't keep process that much information at one time.
Absolutely. So what we said, okay, every Friday they had a performance review, and the employees were calling it Bloody Friday because they know like all numbers will be red. Regardless of what we do, all numbers will be red. Because a lot of that performance is simply caused by the system, and the employees like powerless within the system. So we went in and we told the leaders over there, like, get rid of those 38 KPIs. Only focus on a number of them. What are the most important ones here? Mm-hmm. How do these 38 correlate with each other? Mm-hmm. And we found out that some were negatively correlated.
All right.
So if one goes up, the other goes down. So employees needed to make a choice between those. So focus on the 4 or 5 most important ones. And whenever you have that Bloody Friday, right, get rid of the Bloody Friday. Don't go over the numbers on a Friday, right, and everyone leaves depressed, goes into the weekend depressed. Focus on, okay, what can we do so that you can serve the customer better? So flip it around. Mm. Don't punish the employee simply because of a bad performance. Do it the other way around. Okay, what can we do? What can I do as a leader to make sure that you are doing better? So we did coaching for the team leaders in that organization. And in the end, things improved because they let go of that obsession with control. Turned out that it really saved them a lot of money because the turnover went down. Well, turnover of employees went down. Yeah. It went down. Yeah. There were less people leaving because it was more fun to work there.
Yeah. So less training, less recruitment costs, lots of things that actually affect the bottom line.
I know a few things that are so expensive as recruitment from an organizational point of view. Yeah. So if you can avoid that by creating a culture where people are supported, and again, that's where the leader kicks in. Mm. Like what, as a leader, ask yourself the question, what can I do so that my employee becomes better? Most leaders I know, many managers I know, are more about what can my employee do so that I can become better?
Yeah.
What if you flip it around? What if you ask the question, what can I do so that my employee becomes better? And thing is, if the employee becomes better, you become better as well.
Yeah.
Because in the end, their performance will become better. Your team will work better. They will be used as an example in other situations and towards other departments. And you're the one who did it.
Yeah. And every football manager knows that, because the quality of how what they can get out of the team will inevitably give results that make everybody look good at the end of the day. I want to get to one thing here. Tell our listeners about Kalepa. And it's a lot more than just an exotic fruit. So tell us about Kalepa and how it came to be. And actually tell us about some of the things it means. And you guys are busy with this, a couple of years now you've had this spin-off from the university, and you're doing a lot of good work with it. Tell our listeners about that.
A couple of years ago, I gave an inspiration session at a big retailer, and it was about how to improve the customer experience via the contact center. And I gave a talk with a lot of evidence-based approaches, like results from studies and so on. And in the room were a number of freelance consultants, and they gave a talk that was, let's say, 80% the same a couple of weeks earlier. And at the end of the session, at the end of my session, everyone was saying, like, wow, we never heard this story. This is great. We should invite Eve much more often. And they were a bit pissed, you know, because they gave the same talk a couple of weeks earlier. And the biggest difference was that evidence-based approach. And when we look at the world of customer experience management, there are a lot of stories going around that don't have evidence. It's someone's gut feeling, that are not supported, that are not true in some cases. And we felt like, hey, there's a big problem here. So the consultants reached out to me and they said, like, can we talk? Because you were talking about a lot of studies and we would like to see those studies. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it turned out that, well, academia is a pretty closed community, right? It's hard to get in. Mm-hmm. It's a specific language. A scientific paper doesn't read that smoothly. But there's a lot of knowledge in the academic circles that, well, didn't find its way into practice, despite being super relevant in some cases. Mm-hmm. Right, because a typical academic study is, hey, we do an experiment, this is a standard situation, this is a novel approach, and we see what works best. So we have the evidence that one works better than the other. So a lot of that knowledge didn't find its way into practice, and we all felt the need, like, okay, we need to do something about this. We need to make sure that leaders get the right information and work with the right tools at hand, and that they're focused on the right things and not focusing on the latest fad, right? Because that won't bring them anywhere. So we decided to create a spin-off company, which is Kalepa, where we brought together academics and practitioners. So people with 20, 30 years of experience in the field with their feet in the mud, right? Mm. Trying to implement experience management approaches in organizations, but boosted with the academic knowledge. So that's what we did with Kalepa, because we felt the need for it. We felt that organizations, need to have access to that knowledge, but also need to have access to people who can really implement it. So that was our mission, really, to make organizations more customer-oriented. That's what we do. And we are commercially active since January 21. Mm-hmm. And ever since, we run from one project to another. And we can show great results with organizations using our approaches. In one organization, I think the NPS went up with 150%.
NPS being Net Promoter Score, right?
Those who
don't speak the three-letter acronyms out there.
Yes, I'm sorry. The Net Promoter Score, it went up with 150%, which is huge. Wow. Simply because we use the evidence and rely on the evidence to implement customer experience. So we felt that there's really need for companies like this, and the time is now to invest in customer experience. We feel that, yeah, as I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, organizations that are not investing in the customer experience these days might run the risk of lagging behind and mm-hmm. never catching up, might run the risk of losing a lot of customers. So now is the time to do it, because we also don't see a lot of organizations that really can implement it. I see a lot of fantastic speakers, keynote speakers, gurus, blogs, articles, whatever. And they're all talking about how fantastic the customer experience is. And organizations attend these sessions, read those articles, and then they're like, okay, and how do we get started?
Yeah.
So we felt that there was a big need for it
Yes. You're sort of putting the how into it all, aren't you?
Yes. Absolutely. And again, we focus on, every trench of the organization, every layer of the organization, from top management team to people who really deal with customers on a daily basis. Everyone needs to be on board. So we look at the strategy, we look at the tactics, we look at the operations, just to have it all. And that's what makes it so hard, and that's what makes it really so difficult.
Well, I'm a big fan of the evidence-based approach. We're trying to use as much data as we can in the human resource space, and where biases and all sorts of crazy stuff get in the way of good decision making. And at the end of the day, you mentioned recruitment being very costly earlier. Yeah, we're working with organizations to help them improve that process so that they reduce those costs, they keep more of their people and that. But I want to ask you about one last thing, and that is this is the experience I had in a little city or little town called Mechelen, not far from, just north of Brussels. And I was there recently, and I was looking for somewhere to go for dinner with my wife. And we came across this restaurant called the Tien Geboden, which in Dutch means the Ten Commandments. And it said, pay what you want. And of course, you can start to form an impression of that. And all I can say is it was probably the best... one of the best culinary experiences I've ever had, both in terms of the food, the ambiance, and the service. And in the end, we paid what we saw on the other menus nearby and all the other restaurants. So tell, I know there's lots of people out there going, oh my God, how could you go down that route? But just explain how this phenomenon is evolving, and any successes you're hearing or things like that. Explain what this is. In the final few minutes, Eve explains how the concept of pay what you want can contribute to great customer experiences. And he finishes with his super essential tip for how to start getting better at providing outstanding customer experiences.
It's definitely a new pricing strategy where you completely let go of control, right? And you let customers decide what they pay for it, what they pay for, right? A meal, what they pay for a book, music, whatever. So it's becoming more and more popular, and we see more and more applications these days. And at its core, it's all about customer involvement. What if we no longer do something, but we let the customer do it? So what if we as an organization give up control and let the customer control this? That's essentially what pay what you want pricing is all about. And it's funny that you bring up this story, because Annelies Kostert, who finished her PhD under my supervision last year, wrote an entire dissertation about it. So an entire doctoral dissertation about it. It frightens a lot of people. People, whenever we talk about pay what you want, people say, like, you're nuts, right? Why would people do that? Well, it turns out if we look at all the evidence, the number of products and services sold goes up. The average price that people pay for it goes down, mm-hmm. of course. you're not going to pay full price, or not always going to pay full price when you have the option to pay like a little bit less. But in terms of revenue, if one goes up, the other goes down, revenue actually stays the same.
Yeah.
Especially for products that have like lower unit cost, so that have that are kind of low priced. I wouldn't recommend it for cars, but for a meal, for drinks, all those things in that price range, it works perfectly.
And where you can get volume, you see. Yeah, you need to know that you can get volume.
Yeah, you need to get volume. And the nice thing is, the better the experience that customers have, like you are saying with the Team Kubota, the better the experience that people have, well, the more they will pay for it in the end. So in a way, it puts the organization on edge because they know, like, okay, when customers are in control of what they will pay to us, well, what we deliver really needs to be good. Yep. And we cannot make mistakes. And if we make mistakes, we need to solve them properly, because otherwise we have the risk of, well, people not paying anything at all, which is an option in the pay what you want. People don't have to pay. So maybe I can throw the question back at you. What made it so exceptional?
I mean, there were, if I looked around the restaurant, I suppose the capacity was close to 30 if it was full. We just felt like we were the most important people in the restaurant from the minute we walked in. The person paid us attention. What was beautiful about the thing was, we know that at the end of the line, this thing you talk about, you used to have this joke, like you'd ask people who pays your salary, and they'd say, I think it's the accounting department or the payroll department. You'd say, no, it's the customer, right? And you talked about the metrics on Bloody Friday, right? Well, the metrics are there from the minute the person walks in. You know, Jan Carlson wrote the book Moments of Truth way back 30 years ago, whatever, the guy who ran SAS at one stage, successfully for the period he was there. And it was all about every contact point with the customer was a moment of truth. I don't know, we didn't know what to expect. But from the minute we walked in, we felt that we were as important as anybody else. And everybody seemed to be relaxed, and the lady serving made it effortless. Everything seemed to come and surprise us. It was like, I don't know, maybe we'd set an expectation that was lower than what it really was. And that could be what conditioned this. Although I have to say, I will go back tomorrow, and the next time I'll bring more people.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. I've been saying to people, this is an experience you've got to have, if only to understand how excellent customer service, but excellent customers, excellent experience, because the food was beautifully presented. That, and I kind of came to the conclusion, you can go into a restaurant where they set the prices for this, and, you know, you can sometimes not even get that standard. So these people seem to have a pride in it. Then I found out that it belongs to a guy who has more established restaurant, brewery, hotel and that. But he's taken this on as a social enterprise for people who may not be able to afford to buy a nice meal all the time. But he seems to be thinking way ahead of himself in that way. If I read and believe and trust what he wrote in the, you know, in the narrative around the idea behind the restaurant, I hope it succeeds. I think it's an excellent concept.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's about expectations. It could be that your next experience is actually worse than the current one, simply because your expectations are higher.
That wouldn't surprise me, because that's how our brains work, right? That they often set expectations higher. But maybe there's a sort of reliability factor. Let's hope that the reliability factor is there the next time I go. It was just that I think I came across this concept. Was it on your Kilipa? Did you mention it on the website? It just coincided with me having this own personal experience of this. And I thought I'd ask you about it. I've read mixed reviews on it, and there are lots of different models, from restaurants buying up fruit and veg, and that would normally get thrown away, but but serving it up immediately, or people coming in and washing up in the kitchen, or sort of, you know, that's taking it to other levels. But I just thought it was quite a cool thing, and I was curious to get your viewpoint on it.
Yeah, it's a nice example of giving up control as an organization. And if you want to improve the customer experience, less control is typically better. Yeah. Because in this case, well, it puts the employees on edge. It puts the chef on edge to really deliver something and to really work for the money. So that, and they are typically doing it, right? So it's a nice concept, and it's a nice example that the organization need to let it go, right? Let go of control and trust that everything will be all right in the end.
Yeah. And I guess that's an extreme. And from where we started with the organization that controls everything, there's a happy middle ground somewhere there, isn't there? Yep. Which a lot of organizations, even if they start to loosen control rather than giving it up, increasing trust will probably make a lot of progress in what kind of customer experience they create.
It shouldn't end up in a complete anarchy, no. But some level of control is needed. But it's, yeah, if you talk about metrics, it's how you deal with the metrics that's really important. Whether you really put it in the employee's face, or whether you really use it to develop the employee and ask yourself the question, okay, what can I do to make that employee better, right? So flipping it around and yeah, being less control-oriented and more developmental-oriented or service-oriented as a leader yourself is so, so important these days.
Okay. So a couple of tips to leave our listeners with, things that they could start to explore immediately. So whether they're running a business themselves, working in a position of authority, or even just coming in and consulting in that, what's something that people could start to either just pay attention to or start to do immediately after this, listening to this conversation?
Well, the number one thing that I would recommend is write a customer experience statement. Think about, okay, what is the experience that our customers should have?
Yeah.
Right. We want our customers to feel this and this and this, right? Three words, four words, for example. We want them to feel comfortable. We want them to feel inspired. We want them to feel taken care of, something like that. Start with writing down what you want that customer's experience. Because in the end, that's what the organization should be built around. And if you look at a traditional business plan, you need to write about how you're going to finance the business. You need to write about what the brand will be like, how you're going to market the business. But you never write about how will you make your customers feel? What is the customer experience that you are going to deliver? So take a moment, take some time to really reflect on this. What do we want our customers to feel? And then assess, okay, to what extent do they really feel this?
Yeah.
Right? And then use that as a guideline to improve everything else within the organization, to recruit employees even. We need to recruit employees that are able to make people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
We need to change systems, perhaps, in order to make people feel comfortable and so on. So if maybe it's only one tip, but it's really a super essential one. And it's something that we always do whenever we enter one of our clients with Kalipa. Let's write a customer experience statement. How do we want our customers to feel? And use that as a guideline, use that as a baseline for really improving the customer experience. Because I see many organizations like, oh, we want to improve the customer experience. If you ask them, what should the customer experience be like? Okay, we want them to be satisfied. Yeah, maybe that's not enough. That's not concrete enough. That's too vague. So try to come up with a statement, 3-4 words perhaps. How do you want to make your customers feel?
Yeah.
And are we getting there? Are we really doing that? And what is needed to make customers feel that or make customers feel those emotions, experience what you intend. So maybe it's only one, but it's really powerful.
I suspect it might take more than a few minutes to do that in many organizations. Oh. There might have to be a lot of conversations, and then you might have to test it with some evidence to see what the gaps are.
Typically, whenever we do this exercise, we always say, like, it takes two or three workshops, like half-day workshops. And they're always laughing like, oh, no, come on, we can do this in one. And then after one workshop, they're like, okay, we understand why you want us to do it in two or three workshops, because it's it takes much more time than they anticipate. And it's so fundamental that it needs to be done right.
Yeah. On that wonderful note, I'm going to put some links in the show notes. How can people reach out to you, Yves? LinkedIn, or do you have other preferences? Or,
well, let's connect via LinkedIn. You can always send me an email. My email address is on the internet as well. So, feel free to reach out, and I'll be happy to connect.
Okay. Well, on that note, thanks for sharing your insights, your tips, and your extensive wisdom about the customer experience with our listeners today, and wishing you lots of success with Kalipa and everything else that comes along in the future.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. You'll find details of what we covered in the show with links, etc., in the show notes. Please share your key takeaways from today's guest, and let your friends and colleagues know about the podcast. Oh, and if there's a particular author or leading thinker you'd like me to interview, just get in touch, and I'll do my best to get them on the show. This episode was brought to you by Wide Circle, helping you make better talent decisions. To learn more, visit widecircle.eu. That's widecircle.eu. Until next time.